Hello, this is Brendan Riley, and welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder when I get off the train and deliver you a delightful podcast while I walk home. I'm recording this on Monday, February 5th. It's just past 3 o'clock in suburban Chicago. It's snowing today, about 7 degrees out. You can hear there's plenty of traffic around. Apologies, that's a little noisier than I usually like to start, but you can't always control it when you have a podcast where you're walking. Guess that's the limit of the format, eh? Well, let's jump right in. This weekend was really fun. It was the Super Bowl weekend, and I couldn't give a rat's patoot about the Super Bowl, but we had a game day instead, and that marked a sort of a full gaming weekend. On Saturday, we played 2 games of Gloomhaven, which was pretty fun. And on Sunday, we played a game of Pandemic Legacy Season 2. And we played a game of Scythe, a 5-player game of Scythe. My buddy has the big board. We used the Invaders from Afar expansion, and I got to be the Scottish people, which was really fun. Although I can't do a good Scottish accent, so I wasn't able to really get into it, but we had a good time. I got second place, lost by 3 points, but had a great time. It was really fun. So it's actually Gloomhaven that led me to my conversation topic for today, and so that leads me to episode 5, Permanent Decisions. So a story from our Gloomhaven play. If you haven't played Gloomhaven, it's a dungeon crawl with some really interesting elements. You're using a managed hand of cards to fight, and there's limited randomness, but it's far less random than, say, rolling dice, or it feels that way. You also have a lot of special powers you can use, and you can earn experience, and you do all sorts of good stuff. We'll talk about that in a minute. But one of the things that makes Gloomhaven pretty interesting is actually the in-between adventure part. Gloomhaven actually feels a lot like a role-playing game, if you've ever played D&D, as created by a less imaginative GM. By which I mean, when I was a kid and played D&D, the less imaginative GM, including myself, would have as our adventure, we go to a tavern, we're assigned an adventure by somebody in the tavern, we go to a dungeon, we fight the things in the dungeon, we go back to the tavern and get money, and then we do that again the next week. That's kind of a standard D&D adventure. It's kind of boring too, but it fits the genre. So a lot of dungeon crawl games like Descent or other games like Descent, I don't know what the other dungeon crawls would be, they follow that same pattern that you are going to a dungeon and you're crawling through it, and the GM is not as interesting. So Gloomhaven follows this pattern as well. And the thing that makes Gloomhaven really interesting is that you get to make decisions and level up in a permanent way, at least if you follow the directions in the game. There are people who buy like removable stickers and they don't write on the board and they don't destroy cards, but my family's all in, so we make the decisions permanent. And so in between your adventures, during which you're gaining gold and getting loot and that sort of thing, then you also will have road encounters and city encounters. Road encounters are things that happen out on the road while you're walking, and city encounters are things that happen while you're in the city. Generally, city encounters are supposed to be a little bit better than the road encounters in terms of what they do for the party. I don't know that that's necessarily true. Our experience hasn't reflected that, but there's no reason not to believe the designer when they write that in the rulebook. So the story that I want to tell comes from the city encounter we read, which I won't tell you the answer. I won't tell you the story of it, because if you're playing Gloomhaven, I don't want to ruin it for you. But it involved us making a decision, and the decision seemed fairly consequential at the time. So we kind of debated what the decision would be. And the way the cards are created, the story is on the front, and then you flip the card over to see what the resolution is. So you don't actually know what the results of your choice are going to be. And we made our choice, and we read the resolution. And then my wife and daughter and I got in a fairly heated argument about whether we should read the other choice and find out what would have happened if we'd made the other choice. Now, just to be clear, there was never a suggestion that we would mulligan and take the other choice. It's not like we're gonna say, okay, we made the wrong decision, we're gonna take the better choice. But I was of the mind that we should not get to find out what the other choice was. That part of the consequence of making a decision is actually that the narrative limits what we get to know. And my wife and daughter were like, let's read the other one, let's find out what would have happened. And honestly, I was sort of worried. I was like, what if the other one gives us information we shouldn't have? What if it actually opens up knowledge or ideas? What if it spoils another part of the game in a way that we shouldn't have gotten to because we didn't read that? But we also were playing cooperatively, and there's a certain point at which it's not fun to argue anymore. So I was just like, yeah, let's go ahead and read it, because they both wanted to. And it turned out to not spoil too much. It was fine. But it got me thinking about, what is it that makes games like this compelling? So I want to talk today a little bit about the idea of decisions in games, particularly those that are tied around narrative. I'm going to mention four games here. Gloomhaven, I've already mentioned. Another game that this brings to mind is Dead of Winter and its sequels. Dead of Winter is a game from Plaid Hat Games, designed by Isaac Vega and John Gilmore. And it's a cooperative game where you are a group of people living in a kind of compound in Alaska during the zombie outbreak. And you're trying to survive. And there's zombies everywhere, and there's intrigue, and there could be a traitor, and it's all good fun. One of the things that makes Dead of Winter so interesting is its subtitle, A Crossroads Game. So they have this deck of cards in Dead of Winter and in Dead of Winter Long Night called the Crossroads deck. The way this works is, when it's your turn, the person to your right or left draws a card that has a condition at the top. Now, it might be something relatively generic, like if the person whose turn it is moves a character, that then read this card. Or it might be something very specific, like if the person whose turn it is controlling Mike Cho. I remember, for some reason, Mike Cho gets at least one, I remember. Well, so some of them will never trigger. If you don't have Mike Cho, you're never going to get that card, so nothing will happen on your turn with that card. Some of them, because they're sort of generic, will trigger pretty easily, and as a result, you get a nice mix of an event doesn't happen every turn, but they happen occasionally. Well, anyway, when the trigger is met, then the person who has the card reads it and gives the player or players, depending on the card, a choice about what to do. Again, and the choice affects how the game goes. You might have good things. Now, generally, the way that the game is made, you're supposed to know what the result of your choice is going to be. So if it's like, let a person into your compound or lock them out, and if you let them in, then they eat up a food, and if you lock them out, then you lose a morale or something. Fine. But I think the game is much more interesting if it gives you your choice, but doesn't tell you what the result would be. So actually, that's the way we tend to play, is we'll read the choice, but not the result. And then we pick based on what we think we should do, but also trying to imagine what the result would be, but not knowing precisely. I don't know, for me that feels far more thematic. There goes a school bus. So two more games that I want to talk about here, and then we'll talk about what all this means. The first one is Pandemic Legacy. This is a game that's been talked about a lot. It was, for a while, the number one game on Board Game Geek, followed up by Gloomhaven, I think. So it's not surprising to me that both of these are, that they tap into the same kind of delight. And I'll get to that in a minute. But if you haven't played Pandemic Legacy, it's built on the original Pandemic game, the hit that you can get even at Target or Walmart now, which is a game about fighting diseases around the world. And Pandemic Legacy, the twist is that as you go to fight the diseases, you make choices, and those choices become permanent on the board. If you let a disease break out in a city, then the city gets worse. If you let that happen too many times, then the people in the city riot, and that sort of thing. So, and you can choose to do different things as the game goes along, and it will cause different things to happen that make permanent changes to the game. And that's the core of the legacy system. It was also used in Risk Legacy, both of which were designed by a guy named Rob Davio. So that's another game where the choices are permanent, and another game where you're not necessarily supposed to know the other things that could have happened. There'll be cards that you could have gotten that you never get if you don't do well. Like, there's a card that you get, it's a like a win bonus each month that you get when you win the game. Well, if you lose both games that month, you're not supposed to get the win bonus. You never scratch off the little silver stuff on the card, and you don't find out what you're going to get. Similarly, there's a box that you open if you lose four games in a row. Well, you never get that box if you don't ever lose four in a row. So it does beg the question again, do you then afterward go and look? So last game I want to mention is a game that my game group really enjoys. We have played all the chapters of it so far, including the most recent one, which is only a couple weeks old, I think, or a month. And that's Time Stories. Time Stories is barely a game at all. It's probably more reasonably called a choose-your-own-adventure game. In Time Stories, you're figuring out the solution to a puzzle, and you're making choices, and you get to see stuff, and the game is built around the idea of making choices and getting to see some things and not getting to see other things. If you're doing well, you often end up skipping things that might have been good later. And my group tends to have a habit of, after we're done, we go through the whole deck and look for anything we missed to see what else was there. So I guess I wanted to talk about these three things, or these four games, in the consequence of the idea of permanent decisions. I think part of what makes Gloomhaven and Pandemic Legacy so compelling as games is the fact that your decisions are permanent. As much as some people say, yeah, I can enjoy the game, but I also want to be able to play it again, and so they go through various machinations to try to avoid doing any of the permanent changes, I think that changes fundamentally the experience of playing the game. When you have to make it, when you make a decision that has permanent consequences that you can't back up, the emotional impact of that decision is different. It is far more weighty. The experience of it is different. And unless you've actually done that, played a game where you make those permanent decisions, I don't think you can recognize how compelling it is. And here is the example, here's the thing that gets me about how compelling that is. So in Gloomhaven, there are some cards that after you use them, they have a little tear-up symbol on them, and you're supposed to destroy the card. All the road and city cards are that way because, well, most of the time, depending on the result you get, they are removed from the game, and you're supposed to destroy them. Well, every time we destroy those cards, I have a little pitter-patter of, whoa, I shouldn't be doing this. And lest you think that's just me, my daughter gets super excited about the idea of destroying the cards. That she holds her breath and gathers up her energy and then tears the card, and it's very exciting. And part of the reason it's exciting is it's a permanent change. It is a change, it is a decision you're making that you can't go back from. So what does that have to do with all of this other stuff? With games? So here's a little bit of game studies history for you as I approach the end of my walk. When we first started studying games, video games mostly, in the humanities, there was a divide between people who were interested in studying the story of a game and people who were interested in studying the play of the game. The play studiers were called ludologists. If you've listened to Jeff Engelstein's brilliant podcast, I think Gil Hova co-hosts it now, called Ludology. It's about the study of how games are made and how games work. But there was a whole other branch of people who were interested in studying games called narratologists. And these are people who were interested in games not because of the gameplay, although partly, but mostly because they were interested in the narrative experience that those games created. And so, as game studies emerged, there was a kind of battle between people who wanted to study what games do and how they play versus people who wanted to study the stories they tell. And obviously, a continuum is in order. There are games that tell really great stories, but there's hardly any play at all. Something like Tales from Arabian Nights or Time Stories. There are a lot of people who call Time Stories barely a game. It also has puzzle elements that are pretty significant as well. There are other people who are really interested in the narrative component of a game. or that were interested in the game component of the game. People who like really dry Euros, or people who like abstract games where the story is so light as to be absent. And then there's the nice blending of the two, and that's where I think this recent spate of games like Gloomhaven, like Pandemic Legacy, have really come into their own. As in these games, we have seen a burgeoning of experience where the game players are telling stories to one another and also engaging in compelling gameplay mechanisms. And it's in this mix of the two that I think permanent decisions become really compelling. Well, I'm just about home, so thank you for joining me today. Reach out to me at brendan@rattleboxgames.com, and I hope your walk has been good as mine. Thanks.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games. Yeah.